o'clock PM.
Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Carmina, second.
Okay. And is there a motion to approve the meeting minutes from the June 8th meeting?
I motion to approve.
Carmina, second.
Thank you. At this time, comments from the audience may be made on items not listed on the agenda that are of public interest and within the subject matter jurisdiction of the district. The committee has a policy of limiting speakers to not more than 3 minutes. The committee cannot take action on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on an agenda item when it comes up for discussion and or actions. Are there any public comments at this time, Andrea?
There are not any, but we do have several public comments when we get to old business. So after the board discusses, Chair Perez-Gill, just a reminder to please ask the public if they have any comments, because we have several for okay. Item 5 under old business.
All righty, thank you. So we'll move on to, hearing that there's no public comments right now, I'll move on to old business. Number one, funding request update. Information is in your packet on pages 8 to 13. Does anyone have any questions about this information?
Yes. Okay. Can you review some of the red on the status column? Let me be more specific. Sorry about that. I guess it's I'm not necessarily sure what we mean by no receipt of documented date, personal conference date, proposal conference date pending. I think the other ones I understood, they were just tabled or pending a site visit. But those and two ones I didn't understand.
Yeah, and actually the two Alianzas, we have had proposal meetings with them and we had requested documentation from them that they were going to send us, specifically Alianza Coachella Valley. And they had not received, they had not sent them to us to date. However, we did reach out to them and they are asking to withdraw that application until the strategic plan has been approved. Then they're going to resubmit. And Alianza Nacional de Campesinas, we had invited them to a pre-proposal conference to talk about their mini grant. And we reached out to them to ask for a date for that. And they also would like to withdraw. So those two have been withdrawn.
Thank you. I thought like a big conference and we were waiting.
Because of COVID, we would always have site visits. You know, we'd get an LOI and then we'd go down and do a site visit or meet with them in person. So now we're calling them pre-proposal conferences. Or I guess we should call it maybe another name so you don't get confused or other people might get confused. But it's to sit down and talk with them about their LOI. Yeah.
Thank you. I also have a question about like our overall grant application. Anywhere in the grant application, do we ask for an organization's overall budget? Like, what is your big dollar figure budget for this year? Is it 1 million? Is it 400,000?
We do request a number of financial documents, and those are budget year to date, P&L, audited financials, if it's over a $5,000 request. I think those are the main financial statements we ask for. And then we do ask for a project budget as well. And then what our funding, of course, is being asked to contribute to that particular project budget. But we do get all those financial documents in to make sure that they're sound and they're up to date. And Chris and Eric do a very good review of both of them and is included in the grant review when we do actually have a grant review.
I thought so. Thank you. Our strategy sessions that we were having made me think, and I couldn't remember back. And I'm sorry, I didn't do the work to go back into other past meetings to see.
Yeah.
My last question on this is on page 12, this BCR SOM. I don't know what the SOM means, and I'm wondering if
I'm sorry, School of Medicine.
Thanks.
I should spell that out. I'm sorry.
There's been a lot of acronyms lately, and I
yes, like JV for joint venture, you know, instead of varsity, junior varsity. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
That helps point that out. Okay.
Oh wait, I had one more question about the School of Medicine. Is this mini grant a potential larger project? Is there potential there, or is this just like a one time? They just needed a small amount of money.
You know, it's a good question, and I wouldn't be surprised if it could be a larger project. It's almost like a little pilot program that they're doing with the farm workers mm-hmm. and the community in the East Valley, trying to measure depression and anxiety post-COVID, or you know how COVID might have affected their families. And it's utilizing the medical school students and the residents of the psychiatric department as well. So, and they're doing it like almost trying to reduce the stigma. If you get them in to look at them from primary care, then they start asking questions on that particular, it's a set mental health questionnaire that they ask. And if how they rank, yeah, I think that's what it is. Or maybe Jenna knows the form really well. Q3 something?
PHQ9.
Yeah, okay. So that in order to reduce the stigma, so they're already there looking at, it's an integration. They're already there talking to a primary care doctor. Now let's start asking some questions. You know, are you depressed or this or that? And then they rank them. And then if they see that there could be some problems or they may need some help, they do like what they call a warm handoff to a set of behavioral health experts or physicians or nurse practitioners that are there already to work them through and get them connected to behavioral health resources. So kind of doing it in a nice, unobtrusive way and helping to reduce that stigma. We already got you captured to look at you primary healthcare wise. Let's talk about how you may be feeling with this or feeling with that. So it could be the potential of a larger project. Yes, that's something we can ask them down the road.
Thanks. Yeah, it definitely did sound very promising and it sounded like it was useful. I'm very curious to see what results out of the mini grant to see if it can be like a larger program, project, grant, anything. Yeah, thank you. Those are my questions for this section.
Okay. Carmina, do you have any questions for this section?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Andrea, is there any public comments on this section?
Yes, there is. We will start with Jenna, followed by Luz, followed by Armando, followed by David Lowe, and followed by Teresa Hoskins. So let me make sure that Jenna is able to speak. There you are. And go ahead, Jenna, you have the floor.
Thank you so much, Andrea. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Dr. Jenna LeCount-Heinley, and I'm the CEO of HARC. On this list of funding request updates, you'll see the LOI that we submitted to fund our 2022 Coachella Valley Community Health Survey. The grants team recommends declining our request, and I'd like to make the case for you about why you should reject that recommendation and move forward with the project. The rationale listed in the packet for declining the request is that Desert Healthcare District just completed the Community Health Needs Assessment, or CHNA, and CHIP, which is the Community Health Improvement Plan, and that going forward, the district will utilize census data and other secondary data sources. However, several of the measures in the CHNA and the CHIP are coming from HARC's triennial survey, such as how many people needed mental health care and couldn't get it in the past year. There are no other sources of this data that cover many of these indicators. And so the HARC survey is actually critically important to the district's ability to track population level progress stemming from your strategic initiatives over the next few years. Additionally, the HARC survey is not just used by Desert Healthcare District, but also by many of your grantees and partners. Hundreds of organizations use this data, and you'll hear from a couple of them today who were nice enough to come join us. And many use it to support the request for funding from outside sources, places outside the Valley that don't know what the needs are here. They've used it to bring in millions of dollars in funding to support much needed services in our Valley. While Desert Healthcare District is a generous funder and giving away close to $4 million a year, the need is so much greater, as all of you know. And so this survey is being leveraged to bring in millions from outside agencies so that the Desert Healthcare District grant dollars can go farther. Over the past five cycles, this would be our sixth survey, Desert Healthcare District has always been our primary funder, funding about half of the cost, which we are incredibly grateful for. Again, this request that I asked for is funding about 47% of the cost. It's more than $100,000 less than it was in any previous ask due to improvements in our methodology. We use your contribution to leverage other funds. So for example, in the last cycle, 22 other organizations and numerous individuals donated to make this happen and to make up the other half of that budget. If the district doesn't fund the survey this cycle, we're still gonna try to do it with the help of those same 22 organizations and anyone else I can find to ask for money, but none of them can contribute at the same level as the district. And this means it's going to damage the robustness of the data. The survey will be shorter, the sample size will be smaller, we won't be able to do outreach to disadvantaged communities to tell them it's trustworthy. This means we'll be really hampered in our ability to do custom data analysis and to look at health disparities. It's not just enough to know that this is the uninsured rate. You want to know who is the uninsured rate highest for? Is it highest for people of color? Is it highest for younger people or older people? Is it highest for people who are, lower education? These health disparities are what we can dive into with our data that you can't do with other secondary data sources like the census. So being unable to do that will be a major blow to hundreds of data users' ability to promote health equity. So please, in the interest of promoting equity in our community, which I know you support, please reconsider and don't decline this request for funding. Thank you so much.
Okay, so next we have Luz. Let's make sure you're unmuted. Ms. Moreno, you have the floor.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, good afternoon. My name is Luz E. Moreno. I'm here representing as the president of the Los Médicos Voladores SoCal chapter. I would first like to thank the Desert Healthcare District for all the years of support for this community health survey, which I have found very important. I'd like to share with the board that as someone who brings free medical, dental, and vision services to the Coachella Valley, having the CV Community Health Survey is a resource for my events, a resource to justify through the information that I get out of this report why we need to continue to bring these services to the Valley and why the local healthcare providers should continue to come. Primarily, I like the adult and senior healthcare. These are two subjects of interest in the services and for the providers we recruit for this free for our free clinics. Having a local survey, I think, is amazing, and report from HARC. It's essential to know where our families and community members are with their healthcare needs, mental health, and a lot more. Right? I utilize this triennial report in my grant writing to include facts on the healthcare needs. What are the barriers that our communities are being faced with? It was interesting to know that 42,222 people, 14.4% of our Coachella Valley, sought healthcare or prescriptions across our borders. The data highlights the change we need to advocate for in our communities. The next survey will be different due to our pandemic. For grassroots database is essential to be able to make changes in our policies, to raise the bar, to include health in all policies. HARC's principal objective is to advance quality of life through comprehensive data research and analysis and turn it into action by our community leaders. It is very important. I ask that the healthcare district continue to support the work, especially now for the following community health survey. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And then next we have Armando. You are unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you. This is Armando Hernsbeck, founder and executive director of Get It Merchant Entrepreneurs. And I'm here just to share my testimonials of the services and the collaborations we have done with ARC in the past. We are a small nonprofit. And when we have any service like this one, it really helps us to put a solid data in our grant applications. We focus on small businesses and Latino communities. And we can always find statistics online with the census and other resources, but I haven't been able to find any other local resource to find specific statistics about Latinos in Coachella Valley. A couple of years ago, ARC was able to provide me with a really nice report about poverty among Latinos. Thanks to that, I was able to put a solid grant application. I just want to highlight that it's really useful for us to have a local agency that can give us that kind of information updated every year. And to be more specific, I believe that that data is important not only for the organization looking for data, but also it's one of the best way for us to prove founders why we need their support. I really thank ARC for their services. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Andrea, who's next?
David, you have the floor. I'm just going in order from what the comments that we had in the chat.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. I'm David Lowe. I'm Distinguished Professor of Biomedical Sciences in the UC Riverside School of Medicine. I am the Senior Associate Dean for Research in the School of Medicine, as well as the Director of the Center for Health Disparities Research, which has which is an NIH-funded center with several projects in Coachella Valley, looking at some of the underlying health care issues in the among the residents there. And I wanted to mention, hopefully some of you had heard the NPR podcast last week on the Salton Sea and Eastern Coachella Valley. It was a very important podcast and highlighted the fact that among the needs in the region is that we simply do not have sufficient amounts of data looking at the health effects of the Salton Sea to account for the high incidence of asthma among the residents in the region. One of my major projects in that region is also looking at the underlying causes and the connection between Salton Sea and asthma in that region. So I'm here to support the importance of the data generated from the HARC health assessment surveys and the ability to provide detailed geographic and clinical information on the health effects in the communities in Coachella Valley. This is really important in helping us understand the underlying mechanisms, the proximity to the Salton Sea, and this is going to be really important from a policy point of view because there simply isn't the data. You may have seen that a year or so ago when Imperial Valley also declared a state of emergency and the critical need for having epidemiologic data on the health effects in the region is just another highlighting of the importance of the kind of data that HARC provides to the researchers, to healthcare providers such as the UCR School of Medicine, which is certainly has a presence in Coachella Valley, as well as the communities that really need to understand what the impacts are in their community and what the relative inaction of the projects such as the Salton Sea Management Plan have really been unable to provide, and communities really are in really deep need of this kind of data from HARC. So again, just to say that, you know, we're very much in need of the kind of work that HARC has done and continues to do. The longitudinal data gives us information on trends as well as detailed geographic information and clinical information on the impacts. So again, really strongly in support of HARC. They've been a great partner. And I think the funding for the work that they're doing is really critically important to the community. Thank you.
And then next we have Teresa Hoskins. Teresa, please unmute yourself and you have the floor.
Hi there. Hi, everyone. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right. I appreciate the ability to make this public comment. I'm speaking and wearing a multitude of hats right now. As a healthcare professional, I can't believe it, but I've been practicing for 29 years in the Coachella Valley as an ambulatory care pharmacist. And I'm currently working at Desert Oasis Healthcare on the senior management team, which is a large provider of healthcare in our Coachella Valley for a lot of lives. And in fact, when looking at the lives that we've lost in our own valley due to COVID, a third of those lives have been members of Desert Oasis Healthcare. So it's something that we've seen every day in our work. And also I've had the opportunity to work with HARC very often over the years and have been on their board for several years and am now board president. And so I am really coming again also as advocate for funding for HARC's projects. I know I've been anxious and to look forward to the 2022 survey to really see in the data how our community has been impacted as a result of COVID-19. And I know we all feel those impacts, but seeing that in a data-driven way is going to be so important. And how has our community changed as a result of this pandemic? It's impacted globally, but had so much impact on us here locally. What are the long-term effects from a mental health perspective? How has it changed the workplace in our valley here, which already is different from looking at the rest of our county and the state? Our Coachella Valley is a unique area, and that's what's always so special about HARC is the data provides specific to our area. Our housing situations change as a result of COVID. How is it impacting our own Coachella Valley members' long-term health? The great thing about the HARC survey, because it's repeated every 3 years, is we can see what has changed in the data. And we have our baseline pre-pandemic survey from 2019. And this is going to be very valuable as we look forward to redoing, repeating the surveys and being able to compare that data. And because COVID has revealed so much about disparity in our population with access to care or how the pandemic has impacted different communities. It's really important that we're able to see in the data in a more detailed way. HARC collects raw data, and they're gonna be able to do more in-depth analysis that is just not going to be possible when looking at other more general data sources. So what I wanna say in short is that the HARC survey is really a key tool to assess the community health in our area in the midst of this global pandemic. And it's really important for us to understand our local issues. And so for the Desert Healthcare District, which we admire so much and has been a significant contributor to the HARC survey, to really support health equity, we just really ask you to reconsider the staff recommendation and fund our survey. Thank you for this opportunity to talk about that.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on to Dr. Bullock. And just a reminder to everyone that we do allow 3 minutes for public comments for items that are listed on the agenda, but we do realize sometimes that there is a need to go over, but just a friendly reminder. So Dr. Bullock, you have the floor. Please go ahead.
Hi, can you all hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Perfect, thank you. My name is Edgar Bullock. I am the interim CEO for Borrego Health. I wanted to first take this opportunity to thank the Desert Healthcare District for commissioning the previous triennial surveys and the community health needs assessment from HARC. These assessments are very comprehensive and have been really pivotal components in our discussions, most recently with the Department of Healthcare Services, in terms of opening our new Coachella Clinic, a 40,000 square foot facility that we intend to open in January. From here, we're really better able to understand the health needs of the community and really tailor our approach in terms of provider recruitment based off of what we are reading from these surveys. Many of the components of the needs assessment come from that triennial survey that HARP collects. So I realize that, as you have heard from the previous speakers, that we're not the only organization who's able to benefit from this very important information that this survey is eliciting. It really is the only local population level survey. So we can get data on diagnoses like diabetes from hospitals and clinic, but not for the community as whole. And so that's what's unique about the unique and important about this survey and the continuance of the survey. In addition, they're able to use this raw data to look at various health disparities, and we're able to kind of harness on that information to target the way that we're rendering care to better address those health disparities. And now more than ever in this COVID era, will the results from this upcoming survey have a large impact on the decisions that will affect how we as an FQHC can render the most effective high quality care for the future. So I ask the healthcare district to continue supporting this very important triennial survey. I thank you very much for the support that you had in the past for them. This has been really pivotal information that we're able to use. So thank you very much for that. Again, the quality of data that HARC is putting out, its presentation and its interpretation is really not matched by anything else. So I really ask that you continue to support HARC in this effort. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
John Epps, go ahead, you have the floor.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity again. I come speaking on behalf of asking the committee to approve this grant and not to go with the recommendation. I've been doing a lot of work lately on healthcare disparities and on DEI. And one of the things that we've really been focusing on is the importance of local data. And I just think that defunding this project at this time would do a disservice to Black leaders of nonprofits in particular, who are already in a struggle for funding. And so I want to suggest that if we want to really attack inequities, then we want to give people the best data possible. And HARC has been a source of that data for us for a long time. And as we try to turn around this idea that Black-led organizations have issues, it would really impact them severely to lose another source of local data. So I'm just asking that the committee would reconsider its decision and fund this grant. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then next we have Will Porter. Go ahead, Will, you have the floor.
Hi there, thank you. Yeah, I thank you for the time. I just wanted to emphasize, and I think a lot of great support has already been expressed for these surveys, and I just wanted to share personally that these surveys have been really influential for my work studying health and health disparities in the Eastern Coachella Valley. I think that as an ongoing, regular, primary data source, not a meta-analysis of existing data, not a compilation of data that comes from other sources, but actually primary data coming from residents and then analyzed by HARC, I think that these surveys stand as a really unique and powerful tool that is that doesn't have a real easy replacement anywhere else in the data landscape. And that furthermore, that it's out here at a time when these kinds of questions, looking at health disparities, are really coming to the forefront. And I think that it's a critical time for this kind of data source to continue and has potential to have a great deal of power if we are able to maintain this kind of longitudinal primary data source. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And I believe the last one is Bill Van Himmert. Himmert, is that correct?
Oh, yes.
Bill,
There you go.
Hi, I'm Belvin Hamert, Director of Institutional Giving with Desert AIDS Project, DAP Health. And I just want to reiterate what all the prior comments have been made. DAP utilizes HARC's data not only to obtain funding services and grant applications at a national and a state and a regional level, but also locally. It provides just one out of many type of data analysis, but it provides what the Coachella Valley's needs are as we relate it to more of a national grant deliverables and also local and state deliverables, and also the needs of the community and representing that. It is a valuable tool for us in terms of not only comparing longitudinal data on prior surveys and the current survey, but it also provides data into what needs to currently be assessed and also moving forward. So once again, I would also support that the program committee reassess the decline recommendations from the grants team and to move this forward. Thank you very much for your time. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
If there's any other comments, please raise your hand at this time. I think that is it, Chair Perestio.
Thank you, Andrea, and thank you everyone for your comments. I'm not sure what it is we do about this. Can we make a decision to have it reassessed or?
Chair Perestio, typically these are public comments. We don't have to respond to public comments.
Okay, thank you. So we will move on to the next section.
But if we do want to discuss this, when do we do it? Now, later?
You can discuss it now, we can discuss it later.
Would you mind if we discuss it now? Director Presgill?
No, that's fine.
So I'm actually on the website right now, and I am remembering what it looks like. It's been a minute since I've been on the triennial survey, and I think a lot of the comments that were brought up today just really make sense. Some of them being like longitudinally, we can see from 2007 to 2019, like different data sets. The ones I focused on really show us like an increase of positive health across the Coachella Valley. I definitely do see how some of our grantees, which were present here, and others can use those like data sets to gain more money. The other thing that comes to mind being on the website is that even though we have created our community health needs assessment, it's not in a place like the HARC data is. It is not as accessible, as readable, as legible as this particular data set is. So that's sort of my second point, right? And my third is, someone said it. Give me a second to find where my notes are. Oh, the pandemic. Our community health needs assessment was done during the pandemic, and that tells a very particular story of a very particular time in history. One of the questions I have is, this survey is going to be conducted in 2022. Hopefully we're in a very different state of the pandemic by 2022. I think it's important to be able historically to analyze data sets of during the pandemic, which is what our community health needs assessment does, and after the pandemic to figure out like, is people's health declining or is it getting better post-pandemic? And honestly, if I'm like sitting on this website right now and looking at 2013, 2016, 2019, and then thinking about 2022, I personally feel like that's valuable data. So that's where I'm at. I would like staff to revisit this, but before that, I would also like to hear beyond just the, I would also like to know if the only reason why this LOI was denied is because of our CNA, or if there's further information that maybe we can't read in just the little square.
Donna, is that something that you can answer for Director Borja? I've never done this before, so I don't know if we can ask that during here or if it has to be something that has to be put on the agenda for discussion and
definitely, this is not an action item.
My question is not necessarily
action. You can always direct staff, but you can't have any action for items that are not listed as action on the agenda.
Okay.
But you can always make suggestions
so she could,
to direct staff. You can as the chair.
Okay. So the question that she's asking, could it be answered by the staff? What she's inquiring, or is it something that we can't ask?
Yes, I believe Donna can provide an answer to the question.
Page 11 of our packet, essentially.
I think that the reasons that we gave are pretty straightforward. We are just going through our strategic plan, and we've got our strategies that have been lifted up, where the community has spoken, and of the five priorities, two of them that the board has adopted or accepted or wants to try and make some kind of impact and movement is access to primary care and access to mental health care. And that is where it seems like majority of our funding is going to go to. And that the CHNA is driving what we are looking at in the strategic plan. We're not discounting that HARC's data is not valuable. We understand that. We understand that a lot of organizations use it. I mean, heck, we incubated it in 2005 and spun it off and realized the importance of it. And have been funding it to over the last six, going on the six monitors, to tune of over $3 million. So we understand that we are, you know, the main funder. But we wanted to give our CHNA a chance as well, and that we are going to be using different data platforms. We're going to be using results-based accountability, clear impact. We're going to be asking our grantees to revise their grant applications and how they are going to help us make an impact and what we want to move. And just want to emphasize that this community health needs assessment is not a district health needs assessment. Yes, we commissioned it, but it's for the community, and it is on the website for all the community to use. And who's to say why other organizations can't use this data as well to bring in the millions of dollars that HARC says has been brought in. So use the two in combination. And a lot of these organizations that also have been promoting how they use HARC also have some funding that they could also help fund some of this community, fund some of the survey as well. I don't know if anybody else on the staff wants to add.
I would like to add that we just completed a comprehensive community health needs assessment with more than 200 health indicators. That data is recent. The document was just completed. It was completed by the same organization that today is arguing about creating another document with more data. This is a comprehensive community health needs assessment that it's available to the entire community. And that it is complex because it's a long technical document
that it's meant to be used for by organizations that can extract the data that it's in that document and advance that data to seek more funding. It actually provides much more information to many more organizations, many more agencies than just the document that HARC creates every 3 years. There are additional documents that HARC creates in response to compliance issues related to the hospitals in the area, to Eisenhower, to the FQHCs. There are many other documents that they create.
Hello? And
those are contracts that they respond to.
I talked to Leticia and she said that—
Can you mute yourself, please?
But today she very—
Alicia, can you mute them? I mean, Andrea, can you mute?
I got her, thank you, yeah.
Thank you.
So that's in a nutshell what we consider with this. We just completed a community health needs assessment. Director Borja, you and I have had conversations about the quality of the report. We had some in-depth conversations about the community health needs assessment and the methodology that we used of interviewing community members to make sure that we are not only looking and researching health indicators, but we are asking our community members, how are those health indicators related to their living conditions, whether those are the priorities that they have or not. So we have elevated the health disparities that we have in the Coachella Valley, utilizing HARC data and even more data that it's not typically data that HARC accesses or analyzes.
Thank you, Conrado.
You're welcome.
Do you have any questions, any more questions, Director Borja?
Just to say that, thank you, Conrado and Donna. I hear you and I understand what you're saying. That's it for right now. Nothing else on my end.
Okay. Hermina, do you have any comments on this subject or on this topic? I'm sorry.
No, thank you.
Okay, so hearing no more comments, we'll move on to number two on old business, grant payment schedule. The information is on page 14 of your packet. Does anyone have any questions about the information provided on the packet?
Yes.
Okay.
A lot. I have a lot if someone else wants to go first.
Okay. Carmina, do you have any questions about the information on the packet?
Don't. Thank you.
No. Okay. You can start, Karen.
All right. Thank you for putting this together. I think Donna, for sure. I'm not sure who else. It's a lot of information and it was like very easy to go through because it's all uniform. So thank you very much. I'll start there.
It's our finance department, Chris and Eric.
Thank you, Chris and Eric. Very helpful. I had a question about a couple different things. On page 17, Olive Crest Treatment Center, they share that the most significant barriers for their project has been identifying and recruiting qualified and dedicated staff for key health roles in the Coachella Valley. Just wanted to point that out as something for us to like take note and keep notes of. And if and when they do like get to the final report, I hope they like were able to find some qualified and dedicated staff. But I know that this was, I'm just pointing it out because this was something that we spoke about at our strategic meeting. And now our partners are sort of, our grantees are bringing it up as like, yes, does our healthcare district, like you're kind of on the right ballpark here. Just wanted to point that out for my colleagues.
And Karen, I apologize. I thought you were talking about the grant payment schedule. That's what I said, it was Chris. Into the progress and final reports. Okay, all right, sorry.
I jumped ahead, I'm so sorry. I have no questions for the finance report.
Okay.
I am in. Okay. We'll move on to the next part, program updates, progress and final reports update, pages 15 to 83. All the information is in there. Karen, you can continue with your questions if you'd like.
Does anyone else have any questions first? I don't want to dominate.
I have one question. I know Olive Crest was opening their new building over, I believe it's on Corporate in Palm Desert. Is that open already?
I believe so. Okay. I believe so, yes, but I can double check.
Okay, so they might have been able to find their staff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Karen.
Okay, thank you for that event. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're on the call with us, so I think some of my questions might just not be able to be answered today, but one of the questions I had on page 23, where is it? Under reasons for being seen and serviced and services provided, it says to urgent care ER. Did the philanthropic foundation send people to the ER? Did they suggest people go to the ER? I was kind of confused about this. And I'm curious also just like,
This is the street medicine program. So this is the students, the nursing students that are going out and working with the homeless and other vulnerable populations. And they have pop-up clinics everywhere. So the people that they see, they may need to refer them to urgent care or to ER because they're just too sick for them to help. But these are the nurses that are out in the field with their supervisors, student nurses.
Thank you. That's helpful. I wasn't sure they had like a transportation service or if they were like calling the ambulance and just needed clarity on that. On the fine food bank section, which I believe is the next section, they mentioned leveraging our cookbook and recipe cards. That was really awesome. I just also wanted to point it out to my colleagues. I think that's all I'll say on my notes there. Page 32, the Desert Cancer, Desert Cancer Foundation. Their first goal
what page are we on?
32.
Thank you.
On this like final outcomes, I really appreciated that they told us like the zone of places where like residents were working with local residents within the district boundary lines. I'm curious if towards the end of their grant cycle, if they'll actually be able to reach people in Indio, Coachella, and the Eastern Coachella Valley. Just something to note for staff as you all like continue your conversations with them.
Previous grant applications, they had received funding from us. This was pre-expansion of the boundaries. And so they do have a new grant request in front of us, which would incorporate the whole Coachella Valley. So it'd be all the zones. I don't know why they picked those different zones out, but yeah.
It was helpful to like think about, if I'm being honest. Mm-hmm. On page 33 in this like goal number one, I cannot find it for the life of me, but they mentioned at some place here that there are just some people where it's like hard to reach them for mammograms. The helpful thing is that the healthcare exchange now requires insurance companies to pay for mammograms. So that's great. but I'm wondering if they would be someone who would benefit from our mobile unit. I'll be honest, I've never had a mammogram, so I don't know if you can like load the machine up and
You need a special machine because you have x-ray equipment. You've got to have the the barrier shields and things like that. I've seen mobile mammography clinics and they're huge, and you do need it's very delicate, like I said, you got to be careful because it's if you're using x-rays now, a lot of it's digital. When you go into the different cancer screening centers and stuff, it's digital. But the mobile mammogram clinics in the past were all just the pure films x-ray, which is radiation. So I don't even know if those exist anymore, but you wouldn't be able to get them into our mobile van. No.
I think Borrego House has one that goes to their
clinic. Do they?
I can't remember the name. I know it starts with the name. But we've used it in the past for our patients, to refer our patients to their mobile clinic.
But it might not work with what we are trying to set up because it wouldn't necessarily just be like one organization in the mobile unit the entire time. Be like on and off, on and off, like getting your equipment on and getting your equipment off the mobile unit. That was my only question. If like the Desert Cancer Foundation might benefit or not from our mobile unit that's soon to come. That really was it. I appreciate both of your answers. One, a mobile unit already exists, and two, the answer might be just no. Thank you.
I mean, if they were to show them how to test themselves, maybe they would be able to use the exam rooms in the mobile clinic. But I think like for testing, they would need those machines.
They would, yes, for screening and diagnostic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Do you have any more questions?
Yes. The next one is a little more uncomfortable to discuss, but it's on page 40. Regarding the grant makers concerned with immigrant and refugee justice. I'm going to be really short-winded about this and just straight up flat ask. Can you please ask them for a rewrite of this grant? These are great figures. However, they don't really share local data. They don't really talk about our local partners. It's hard. It will be hard for us to evaluate a similar grant for future funding because this grant is so broad and it doesn't really tell us, did our funds support or not support local people through our local partners. They do have a website on here where you can like click and go to their partners, both in the Inland Empire. And they do have like the Regional Immigrant Emergency Relief Fund, Coachella Valley, but that doesn't really, like the partners there don't show up in this report at all. So I'm just wondering if we can ask them to rewrite it, not so broad, but like very specific with the amount of money we gave them.
Actually, the $150,000 went to Alianza, Coachella Valley, for specific assistance here in the Coachella Valley. And Conrado, maybe you might want to...
Was that the grant where they helped also with mental health and food resources and rent?
No, that's Structurize you're thinking of.
This was a complete straight cash assistance, and they were targeting farm workers and other underserved populations in Eastern Coachella Valley. It was a cash assistance program, and it was a pass through. And the reason why we worked with grant makers with GSER, it was because they were leveraging additional dollars, so. I believe Alianza received much more than $150,000. It was, I believe, $400,000, something like that.
So none of that information is here, and it makes it really hard to say, yes, we were responsible with these dollars because they did come back and this is how they help. Like, it's really difficult to figure out if yes or no the money came back to the Coachella Valley the way the grant was written and the way we assumed we'd be voting for. So I'm just wondering, not wondering, I'm asking if we can ask them to rewrite this or portions of this. Doesn't have to be the whole thing, but like parts of it that give us more specific information about the Regional Immigrant Emergency Relief Fund, Coachella Valley.
Sure. We can ask for more specifics. I know that the financial documentation, the receipts they sent in did show that the money went to Alianza Coachella Valley.
That's what I figured, but it's really hard to tell from this write-up.
Right.
And it's, I don't want there to be room for error with grants such as this one, because we want more grants such as this one and further relationship and partnership with these folks.
Right.
My next comment, and now it gets easier again, it's Live to Rise and our report back from then. In their report back, it said that by September, they would reach, now I can't find it. Oh, page 50.
4,500 members?
Yes, 6,500 members. And then we keep scrolling down a little bit more. Actually, no, sorry. 4,500 qualified renter households. And it said that they would do that by September, but they've reached 2,789, page 52, not 50. Do we know if they were able to reach everybody? Will they?
The next progress report will be due, it'll be August 1st through October 31st. So when we get that next progress report, that should have an update on the numbers.
All right, thank you. And for my colleagues on the board, I will share that I know this grant was like, do we, don't we, like, how do we think about this? I will say that it is a really, really good thing we shared this money with Lift to Rise. Imperial County has had millions of dollars for similar rental relief programming. And those millions of dollars have not been spent. And there are so many people in their pipelines requesting rental assistance that are not receiving it. So Heather had come with a foreshadowing that if we do not hire people to expense this money, go through the applications, rent relief money will not be given to residents. It's happening in Imperial County. And just wanted to say really, really glad that staff came prepared, that all of the presentations we had, and that we were able to vote yes on this.
I have a comment on that. I have heard from certain patients that have gotten the help from Live to Rise, that they have also been contacted, letting them know that they might qualify for more months to be covered. So that's kind of cool that some of these patients that are having like a long-term effect are being considered to get the grant again. So that's good.
So on page 51, in that big meaty paragraph there, right in the middle, it says, second, we will conduct two surveys of households asking people like the impact of assistance. That question is so important in helping our county supervisors figure out if rent relief programming should be part of every county budget. For some of us, the answer is obviously yes. You will always have people who need help with rental assistance, but others may be more willing to like move in that direction if there's like data available for them. So I'm really glad that Lift to Rise is like thinking about this so that others can take this data, they can take this data and just continue championing programs like rental assistance, which Yvette just mentioned is working. That's it on my Lift to Rise comments and questions. Thank you all for helping me out there. Let me see. not that one. Oh, on page 71, this is the air quality, air monitoring, Public Health Institute, Coachella Air Quality and Health Analysis. On page one, they share some of like the data that they've been able to collect. I'm not a science nerd. I didn't understand a lot of it, but I will say that it's very cool that some of this data has been able to be collected. It kind of touches on some of the points that the AB617 group is talking about regarding data collection, bronchitis, asthma, things of that nature. I didn't realize the grant was until 2023. So I'm just glad that there's also like longevity in this project.
I would like to add to that, Director Borja, that this grant was provided to the Public Health Institute because there is a gap in data, as you know, related to the health impact of poor environmental conditions here in the Coachella Valley. The Public Health Institute has tap into a number of databases that are allowing us to have an analysis of hospital discharge data that document the number of discharges by zip code. And as you may recall, the first report that they created looked at the disparities in health outcomes for populations around in the Salton Sea. And we shared that data at one of the meetings of the AB 617 program. This was the first step of a number of other steps that they will be taking to continue to document the health impact of poor air quality in Eastern Coachella Valley.
I'll just continue saying it's needed. In my community, they're opening up an 8th gas station with our 98th gas pump, right? So maybe with some data, these folks will stop making such like erroneous decisions across our entire valley on things that are very small and things that are very big. My last sort of, it's a comment, it's not a question, but it lands on page 77 with Jewish Family Services. It is their second bullet point under program project tracking. It says, please describe any barriers. In the middle of the paragraph, they discuss some like barriers like loss of income. I would be very interested if it's possible, not just Jewish Family Services, but really anyone else that encountered like these barriers that are pretty specific, what they would be, and if we can compare them to our community health needs assessment. I know it's not like scientifically sound method collection, right? But loss of income as a barrier, Jewish Family Services telling us this, and so is our community health needs assessment. It may or may not be important. I was just curious to hear what other barriers they were tracking and what other barriers might match some of ours on our community health needs assessment. That's it. Those are all my questions and comments. Again, thank you, Donna and staff, for just like compiling this, making it uniform. It was long, but it was very informative. Of everything going on around the valley and how money is being spent in some cases, and then leaving questions of, can we just get a little more specific on how money is being spent so we can have good accountability for the public and for ourselves. That's it. Thank you.
I'll give a shout out to Erica because she's the one that compiled all this. She did a good job.
Thanks, Erica.
It's very tedious.
Okay.
Oh my goodness.
Chair Perez-Gil, we do have a comment at this time if the committee is done with their comments.
Carmina, do you have any comments at this time on any of these?
No, I don't, Yvette. Thank you.
Okay, so we can hear a public comment.
Go ahead, Diane. Are you there, Diane Vine? You have the floor. Going once.
She's muted.
Yeah, I'm now unmuted. Hi there. So I was actually going to answer the question that Donna answered very well. So I don't need to say anything about about emergency room and urgent care visits.
Karen, Diane is with the director of the School of Nursing with the student nurses that go out for the street medicine program.
Right. Sorry, I didn't realize I had still had my hand up.
Thank you, Diane.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. And are there any more comments, Andrea, from the public?
No additional comments right now.
Okay, so we'll move on to grant funding requests, which we have none at this time. And we're waiting for the direction. They're waiting for the direction from us after the strategic plan committee has been done. So we'll move on to committee member comments. Are there any committee member comments at this time? Hearing none, I'll adjourn the meeting at 6:06 p.m. and move directly into the program committee meeting for the foundation. I'm gonna wait until 6:07 so I can call it to order. Okay, it is now 6:07 and I will be calling this meeting to order. Is there approval of the agenda?
I motion to approve.
Carmina, second.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the meeting minutes?
Carmina, approve.
I second.
Thank you. We'll move on to public comments. At this time, comments from the audience may be made on items not listed on the agenda that are of public interest and within the subject matter jurisdiction of the district. The committee has a policy of limiting speakers to not more than 3 minutes. The committee cannot take action on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on an agenda item when it comes up for discussion and or action. Andrea, do we have any public comments at this time?
No comments at this time.
Okay, so we'll move on to old business. On pages 6 and 7 in the packet, you will see the grant payment schedule information. Does anyone have any any questions on these, on what is on page 6 and 7? Hearing none, we'll move on to number 2, advancing the district's role in addressing the healthcare needs of Black communities in the Coachella Valley. Who will be providing information? I believe it's in the packet, right?
Yes, the first one is the scholarship fund. And on page 8 of 18, you'll see that they are successful in getting 6 candidates to have been awarded a scholarship. And you can see where they are from, this high school they're from, what year they're graduating, and the major and their goal of what they want to be when they do graduate in healthcare. They're all women. One of the big concerns of the Black and African American Advisory Committee is they're still trying to recruit young men of color, but these are all women. So, but it's open until December 31st, the scholarship application. And they're working with the students on helping fill those out.
Anybody? Well, hopefully any we'll get more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More requests. Does anybody have any questions?
I do. I'm curious, Carmina. For this, I'm noticing, is it Carmen? Technology engineering in healthcare? Can someone explain what that is? I'm not too sure what that is and how it's related to healthcare.
This person wants to utilize their engineering major and go into healthcare for IT and electronic records management, helping try to improve it and also make it more accessible, trying to find the the tweaks, just working in the electronic records management piece, the IT portion of hospitals and healthcare service providers.
Okay, great.
But using their engineering degree and experience in making that happen.
Okay, thank you.
So we're noticing that, you know, it's some of it might not be traditional healthcare. It may not be physicians. It might not be nurses. It could be people that are getting involved, like this one with the electrical engineering. There was another one that
the project manager in healthcare.
Yeah. That's going to be more like almost hospital administration. I mean, you do need people in hospital administration to make hospitals run smoothly and clinics and things like that. So a lot of times maybe the healthcare workforce could be looking outside of the box and not just specific to nurses and doctors and things like that. So just wanted to bring that up.
Thank you.
Karen, do you have any questions about this?
Not at the moment.
Okay. So then we'll move on to our grant that we have for the Desert Highland area. In the packet on pages 9 through.
Right. And this is just a report, an updated report, monthly report from when they first started providing services. July 1st through August 31st, and it ties into the strategic goals of the RFP that was issued and what they responded to and were awarded, and addresses all those numbers. If you have any questions on that, we'd be more than happy to go back to Borrego and ask them. It's pretty, they're doing a good job, doing a really good job. Megan and I tag team every Friday at 2 o'clock, Borrego and the community members, specifically with the Health and Wellness Committee, meet and talk about different things. And the community is very pleased so far. If the mobile clinic cannot make it because they've had an issue with some service providers due to illness or another one had a car accident, if there was an appointment that had been made through the mobile clinic and the mobile clinic couldn't make it, they provide free transportation to one of their bricks and mortar clinics back and forth. And we asked the community, are there any pushbacks on them? They're very, very pleased with the level of service that they're receiving. Megan, did you want to add anything that I might have missed?
I think I would just highlight that I think that this RFP and this project that we have funded is kind of promoting other collaborative efforts with the Jesse O. James Center around employment, and it's just like an ongoing conversation and networking. And I think we hear a little bit about that in our Friday meetings. That may not exactly be tied into this, but that there just more conversations are starting around other aspects and, you know, education related professional development and such. So I think it's moving forward really nicely. I think we have seen a dip in the numbers, but they're very transparent about challenges, brainstorming with the wellness committee. And I think that they're moving forward well.
So. Yeah, I might also add, we've been using for the collaborative, this, the clinic that Borrego Health, they opened it up to the public for testing, COVID-19 testing and vaccination. So our promotoras are also utilizing, you know, that site to refer people to get tested or vaccinated for COVID-19. So I think it's definitely having an impact in the community, not only there in Desert Highland Gateway, but surrounding communities. So great, great project.
I do think it's a great project, and I'm very happy that it's turning out the way it is. It's very exciting. I'm looking forward to the final outcome of what's going to come. I like that they served a lot of patients for teen health, which is very important in their area. I think they had a total of 74 for 2 months, and that's pretty good because that's something that not a lot of teens want to go ask about. So it's kind of good that they had that. And wonderful job to everybody that's working on this project. Does any of the other committee members have comments or questions about this?
No, just kudos. It's really cool to see the, I think this is the first report we're seeing, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so it was very cool to like go over it, and it's very easy to get excited.
Yeah,
good job.
I'm excited too. Okay, Carmina, do you have any comments or questions about this item? No. Are there any comments from the public, Andrea, on this item?
No, there's no comments.
Okay, so we'll move on to behavioral health initiative, informational item.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to just again mention that on September 30th at UCR Palm Desert, we were able to relaunch the Green Ribbon Committee work with the help of Riverside County 4th District Supervisor V. Manuel Perez. And also in that event, we were able to introduce the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation's Behavioral Health Initiative work, which really built upon the results of our 2019 Mental and Behavioral Health Needs Assessment outcomes. And so the structure that was presented in that event will really allow us to work in a very structured way to create the necessary strategic planning to really start to kind of focus on each of those four actual need areas that were highlighted as part of the needs assessment, and really be able to move forward with some short-term solution creation, and then also a heightened focus on long-term creation of strategic planning for things that really will take a little more time and involvement to get those things accomplished. Again, the focus for the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation is really to create a strategic collaborative process that will really not only help to inform our decision-making related to impactful grant funding, but also to create a pathway and leverage the actual experience and expertise of our stakeholder community to expand beyond to take advantage of existing and also emerging funding opportunities. So we will be starting the actual working groups that will focus on the needs assessment areas of need, and the steering committee will provide oversight and support for that process. So you'll receive much more information and updates as that process continues.
Thank you, Jenna. Does anyone have any questions for Jenna? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on to committee member comments. Are there any comments to be made at this time from the committee members?
No.
I just want to say thank you all for putting this all together. I know it's a lot of hard work to get everything in sync, and thank you for the information that was provided. I really appreciate everything. And I guess we'll move on to adjourning the meeting at 6:19. Our next scheduled meeting will be on November 9th, 2021. Thank you everyone for attending.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a nice evening.
Two. Bye.